Hello, and welcome to another installment of Podcast 360. I'm your moderator, Melinda Stevens, with Gastroenterology Consultant. With us today is Valerie Corrin, who is the Medical Director of Intestinal Rehabilitation and Transplantation at Ann and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital of Chicago, and Associate Professor of Pediatrics at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine in Illinois. She is with us today to discuss the role of intestinal rehabilitation programs in pediatric gastroenterology. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Corrin.
Thank you for the opportunity.
What are the fundamental components of an intestinal rehabilitation program? What are the benefits?
So, intestinal rehabilitation programs are multidisciplinary teams that are really focused on the care of patients with intestinal failure and short bowel syndrome. They're about 24.5 cases per 100,000 live births of infants who may have short bowel syndrome. So as you can imagine, this is a fairly rare condition. So some centers may not care for large number of patients with this type of condition. These multidisciplinary teams offer caregivers, physicians, nurses, dietitians, pharmacists who are concentrated on the meticulous care of these patients. Our pediatric society, NASPGN, published a clinical report in JPGN, which discussed the essentials of an intestinal rehab program. At minimal, we felt like there needed to be a gastroenterologist, surgeon, dietitian, nurse, and nurse specialist involved. We thought that collaboration with a neonatologist would also be very beneficial. Depending on the size of your center and the people that you have at your center, other team members definitely would include social workers, feeding therapists, pediatric intensive care unit, interventional radiologists, or other team members, to name a few others. By having these types of patients concentrated in centers with physicians and other caregivers who have expertise with their care, it is thought to improve their outcomes. And there are multiple single center studies which have demonstrated that the outcome of patients have improved once they're cared for in this type of multidisciplinary program.
This type of program includes a multidisciplinary approach. How can gastroenterologists successfully approach this, and what are the challenges?
So the first step is finding a center who offers this type of care. Physicians who may be in busy clinical practices may or may not have the time and resources needed or involved to dedicate to the care for these complex patients. Typically, these IRP programs or intestinal rehab programs are found in larger academic centers. The care of these patients who require long-term TPN consists of dealing with pharmacies, home care companies that are providing the TPN, and potentially the enteral nutrition. You have nursing agencies that are caring for the patient, whether it's simply drawing their blood for their laboratory data or caring for their central line where they're receiving their TPN. As you can imagine, with the large number of caregivers involved in these patients, there's a tremendous amount of paperwork, and it requires very intense follow-up for these patients and their caregivers. You have different portions to the team. You have the dietitians that's helping manage with the nutrition aspect of it. You have the nurses that may be helping more with the central line care, helping to problem solve with issues with feeding tubes, other types of medical conditions the patients may be having, triaging the patients. When I think about intestinal rehabilitation program, their other challenges include trying to find necessarily team members who are interested in caring for these patients. They're very labor intensive given their medical condition. These patients tend to be frequently admitted to the hospital with a variety of medical conditions, but probably more specifically, issues with infection and problems with their central line.
What are the differences between patients cared for in the early 2000s as those described in the Pediatric Intestinal Failure Consortium compared with a contemporary cohort? How have their outcomes changed?
So when you look at that paper that was published in 2012, it was 272 infants cared for within 14 different intestinal rehabilitation programs throughout the country. 47% of those children were able to be successfully tapered from their TPN. 27% of the patients unfortunately died. 26 of those patients underwent intestinal transplant, with an additional 17% of those patients dying. And it was 2011, when the number of intestinal transplants really peaked at about 111. Over the last several years, only about 50 or so are done annually in children. I firmly believe it's the advent of these intestinal rehabilitation programs and their meticulous care that has improved the outcomes of these patients. We don't see the significant liver disease that we saw previously. We don't see these patients perhaps coming into the hospital as frequently with Lyme infections. One of the indications for intestinal transplant, in addition to liver disease, is also loss of vascular access. I think our use of ethanol locks and other types of bacterial overgrowth prophylaxis within these centers have allowed patients to improve their outcome and have decreased hospitalization. If you look at a current cohort of patients now, I would think you would see even more patients who are successfully taken off TPN. And I think you'll see even more patients who may survive on TPN and not need transplant.
What treatment advances are led by intestinal rehabilitation programs? Which do you think is the most important for gastroenterologists to take note of?
It was in 2006 when the Boston group first presented case study looking at two patients who they cared for with an alternative lipid emulsion. It was a fat product that's called Omegavin. And over the last several months, Omegavin, which is this IV fish oil preparation, has actually been approved by the FDA for usage in the United States. I think what we didn't know early on was that it was the lipids contributing to the development of liver disease in these patients. In Europe, they had this type of emulsion more prevalent and had ready access to this. By using these different lipid emulsions over the years, and there are numerous single center studies showing that patients who have received Omegavin and even some that have received reduced amounts of lipids tend to not develop end-stage liver disease and have resolution of their jaundice. Early on, these patients were going on to need liver and intestinal transplants because they were having liver failure. I think now that we know that the lipids is such a significant portion of this, we are very early to transition these patients to alternative lipids. SMOF is the other lipid preparation, which consists of soybean, medium-chain triglyceride, olive oil, and also fish oil. That has been approved in adults, not children, but as with most things, as most medications are also used in kids. I think the approval of Omegavin by the FDA will lead to its increased usage in the United States. And hopefully we can even further reduce the number of patients who develop liver disease because now more patients will have access to it. When it was first introduced, very few centers had access to it. Those centers had to pay for it. Frequently, insurance would not pay for it. And so, therefore, it limited the number of patients who actually had access to it. It required special approval from the FDA. So I'm hopeful that the approval of this drug now, or this IV lipid preparation, will help with continued decline in the number of patients who develop liver disease. When you think about some of the other types of intervention these intestinal rehabilitation programs have done, I think that our use of, for instance, ethanol locks. Now, ethanol locks are instilled within the catheters for varying periods of time with various concentrations to help prevent the infection rate. These patients are very prone to infections. They may be in the intensive care unit. They may need to have their line removed. The use of the ethanol locks have been shown, and again, in single center trials, to decrease the infection rate. By decreasing the rate, you're also decreasing the number of hospitalizations these patients may have, and you also decrease the loss of vascular access. Your TPN is required to be placed through a large catheter in one of your veins. If you are losing access, if you're running out of them in the sense that they're becoming thrombosed, you're unable to use them because of infection, this is an indication for intestinal transplant. So hopefully with the decrease in the number of infections, we're also subsequently decreasing the number of patients who are losing access. There have been surgical advances. There have been intestinal lengthening procedures that are done by the surgeons in the setting of dilated loops of bowel that have been shown to allow some patients to be tapered also successfully from their TPN to hopefully also minimize infections in these patients. So I think it's the combination of all of these different types of interventions that have really led to the improvement in the outcomes of our patients that have intestinal failure and the decrease in the number of patients who go on to need intestinal transplant.
What is the key takeaway for gastroenterologists to know about an intestinal rehabilitation program?
If you have a patient that has short gut or intestinal failure, and that patient seems to have worsening liver disease, if they seem like they're having frequent infections, losing their vascular access, perhaps secondary to clots, if they're having life-threatening infections, if you're unable to advance their feedings, they should be referred to one of these centers. What are some of the advantages to these centers? I think we talked before about the concentration on these patients and the multiple healthcare providers that are invested in these patients and trying to maximize their care. Maintaining a close relationship with an intestinal rehabilitation program, I think, is also beneficial. There are not thousands of these programs throughout the country, and so it may be 4, 5, 6 hours to the closest program, depending on where you live. So having a close relationship with these programs would allow you to have the patient perhaps co-managed. Referral to these programs does not mean the patient is no longer seen at the local center, but by having your patient seen there, they may have alternative treatment plans, alternative thoughts, and even other research protocols, perhaps that your patient may qualify for. One of the things that has been lacking within the field of intestinal failure is that we don't have the thousands of patients that are studied within liver transplant or kidney transplant. What's now starting to happen is that we're having more multi-centered studies done with the support of pharmaceutical companies. And by increasing or exposing, referring your patient to one of these centers, your patient may benefit from perhaps being part of a clinical trial. So I think working closely with an intestinal rehabilitation program, if you do not have one close to you, would be beneficial. I think that the purpose of these programs is to help taper patients from TPN. And using these centers as resources would be a great help, especially if you live a significant distance from these programs.
Thank you again for joining us today, Dr. Corin.
Thank you for the opportunity.